This is our State Capitol Report. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's coming up on 8 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Monday, September 23rd. Coming up in this half of our State Capitol Report, we will talk with Democratic State Representative from Racine, Corey Mason, about some issues being debated at the State Capitol. We'll talk about his concerns about a recent vote to broaden the state's reach of assets of family members whose loved ones received long-term care paid for by Medicaid. And we'll also talk about some concerns that Democrats on the legislature's Joint Finance Committee have about a $500,000 grant to a group with connections to the office of former Assembly Majority Leader Scott Souter. And we will welcome your thoughts and your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Coming up after 7:30, by the way, we will talk about a new poll in the race for governor. We'll talk with a political reporter from the Capital Times about this poll that shows Governor Walker leading potential Democratic rivals in a race for governor, but not by much. And also the poll shows Governor Walker with an approval rating below 50%. So we'll talk about that coming up after 7:30. Let me welcome our first guest, Corey Mason, Democratic State Representative from Racine and the ranking Democratic Assembly member on the Joint Finance Committee. Good morning.
Thanks for having me, Joy.
Well, we wanted to talk about these two items that were before the Joint Finance Committee last week. Let's start, though, with this $500,000 grant. This grant was since rescinded, and there's a lot of controversy, but it says here that you think you were duped on this grant? What is this?
Yeah, so, I mean, it's part of the process that isn't so great about the Joint Finance Committee. Oftentimes, when we vote on things that are about to become law, they will hand out, you know, a 1 or 2 page document immediately before we're about to vote on it. So you can ask a few questions and then you move forward on voting on it. This Sport Heritage Grant, though, I mean, came forward and it was presented by the majority party and said, look, this is a sporting heritage grant that would allocate some federal dollars to a group that's going to do a good job training people to make sure we've got the next generation of people who are adequately trained in hunting and fishing, which, you know, given that we have a constitutional amendment in the state to protect hunting and that it's a long-standing tradition to enjoy our natural heritage in those ways, it seemed like a pretty innocuous nonpartisan grant. And when it was discussed, the presentation was this would be a competitive bidding process. It's not designed for any one group. We'll have more information as to what the grant will look like as we move forward. And so it seemed pretty innocuous when it was presented to us. And it turned out to be far different than how it was advertised. So that's why I think my Democratic colleagues and I felt like we were misled. And even some of the Republicans who've been quoted on it felt like they hadn't got the entire story when we voted on it.
Well, what is the entire story?
Well, so the grant ultimately, much to my surprise, was apparently drafted in a way to just go to one group. The criteria were so limiting and so specific that, you know, long-standing groups like the Wildlife Federation and other groups who might on its face seem to have qualified didn't because they needed to have a specific national designation. So it wound up going to a group called United Sportsmen, which turned out to have very strong political ties with the former majority leader's chief of staff and other Republican folks. And then, you know, then came to find out from the federal government that it didn't even have its tax status as a nonprofit group established and would actually violate state and federal law if we were to give the federal dollars. So the DNR gets that information from federal policymakers and then unfortunately didn't share that information with Joint Finance before the budget was finished. So instead of there being a competitive grant process that people could apply for, there was just this announcement that this new group that hadn't even established its tax status as a nonprofit organization that had heavy former legislative staff and former legislators on its board was suddenly given a grant for $500,000. It became even more interesting, though, once it became clear that the state couldn't receive the federal dollars, the governor's solution wasn't to veto the language. It was just to veto the the language that said that they would get it from federal funds and still move forward with giving this group that doesn't have its tax status $500,000 of state taxpayer dollars. So a lot of people raised some really good questions about, is this really the way we should be handing out natural resources dollars for the benefit of the state of Wisconsin?
Yeah, so you want to see some changes to this process? What would you like to see?
Well, at the very least, we should change the standards for the bill that went through in terms of who can apply. I mean, it shouldn't be written in such a way that in reality only one group that doesn't even have its tax-exempt status designated can apply. We should actually make it a competitive grant process and have people come forward with their presentations and see who could train more people than others, who's got better experience. So we should change that. But we should just also just the process of this just stinks, frankly. I mean, it's one of these things where, you know, the press does some good work asking some questions, and the more you find out about it, the more you realize that you were misled and that the citizens and taxpayers of the state were misled to do a piece of legislation that was really designed to benefit one group with strong political ties to the former majority leader. And that's not the way we ought to proceed.
Yeah. And speaking of the former majority leader, Scott Souter went on to accept a different position with the Walker administration. What are your thoughts on Scott Souter getting that high-paying job?
I don't think he took the high-paying job because of this. I think this was in the works for a while, and I think he's been moving on to do this. But, you know, as sort of his departure from the legislative role that he's played for more than a decade, it definitely puts a bit of a black eye on his legislative career to go out with this cloud sort of hanging over his legacy and his real refusal to answer how this came about. I mean, it certainly doesn't bode well for his legacy, nor does it make the majority party look like they're being forthright with the policies that they're moving forward on. So, I mean, I'm less frustrated about him going to the PSC than I am about just the silence that we've seemed to have gotten in terms of how this exactly happened.
Well, so what do you want to see happen next, especially when it just comes to the grant itself and this effort to try to train people in hunting and fishing?
Yeah, I mean, there's still this language that we passed in the budget that says that we should do something to encourage sporting heritage in the state of Wisconsin. And that idea passed unanimously. I mean, there's bipartisan support for it. We should just go back to the drawing board on the process of that and actually make it a competitive grant process that allows everybody to apply and remove sort of this shady, dark cloud over this political aspect of it and start again. Because the idea behind it is one that I think has broad bipartisan support. We have a great sporting heritage in this state that we should encourage.
Should United Sportsmen still be eligible for the grant?
I mean, given that the federal government told us that them getting the grant would violate both state and federal law, I think they need to get their house in order before they could apply. But if they got their tax status taken care of and if they were actually in a competitive grant process and they came out ahead and it was a fair and open process, I think people would be less concerned about it. But given the bad press that they've gotten, I think those are some tough hurdles for them to overcome.
Our guest is Corey Mason, Democratic State Representative from Racine and the ranking Democratic Assembly member on the Joint Finance Committee, talking with us about a couple of different issues getting some attention at the state capitol these days. We'll take a short break and we will return and we will talk about the Medicaid recovery issue that is making headlines. And we'll welcome your questions at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Right now we are talking with Corey Mason. He is a Democratic State Representative from Racine, about some issues that are making news at the state capitol, and we are welcoming your questions, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us on Twitter @Joy Cardine Show. Well, our guest, Corey Mason, Democratic State Representative from Racine. Let's talk a little bit about this Medicaid recovery, the expanded estate recovery program for the state to recover Medicaid costs. This was passed by Joint Finance Committee last week, but you don't approve of it. Why not?
Right. I mean, they passed language in the budget, but that required the department to come forward with rules about how this would work. But the idea basically behind it is, you know, Medicaid provides nursing home care, long-term care for people who are poor. And long ago, Medicaid decided that, you know, we're not going to basically impoverish or leave the surviving spouse destitute to pay for Medicaid. And we've always allowed the community spouse, as it's called in legal terms, to have a modest pension to keep their home or business and keep their car. So the idea is that you're not going to strip away all these dollars from the surviving spouse because they've still got to survive and survive their spouse after a pretty big ordeal. What the state of Wisconsin has said is, look, we're going to go beyond federal rules in this regard and go after people's assets as it relates to their small businesses or farms and whether or not those can be handed off to the heirs or the children of those folks as it relates to the value of the house if the surviving spouse sells it, as it relates to pensions and other annuities that go above and beyond what the federal government requires states to capture for Medicaid costs. So what you have now, I mean, among the things that got really screwed up in the state budget, I would actually put this at the top of the list. I mean, the coalition of people saying we've got to get this right and start over range from the Wisconsin Bankers Association to the Wisconsin Council of Churches to the elder law section of the state bar to the Farmers Union. I mean, it is a broad coalition of people saying this is going to be really bad for middle-class seniors who've just gone through the ordeal of losing a spouse and are now going to be worried about whether or not they can pass on the family farm or whether or not the government's going to come in and seize their assets or part of their pension or the value of their home if it's sold. And so it's a big departure that goes far beyond what federal law requires the states to do.
Explain how this used to work. If somebody who got long-term care paid for by Medicaid mm-hmm. died, right now or in the past, their assets just go to the surviving spouse, and that's the way it is.
It's not unlimited. I mean, what it is you're able to keep a modest pension, your car, and your house, mm-hmm. and have some rights to pass on your small business or farm. And so it's not like, you know, the caricature painted by this is, well, aren't we going to leave millionaires there with, you know, millions and millions of dollars while we, the taxpayers, are paying for somebody to be in a nursing home? And that's not what we're talking about here at all. Under current law, you're allowed to keep a modest pension, something just over $100,000. So we're not talking about a huge pension by any means, your car and your house. And the idea is that there's going to be a surviving spouse, and he or she should be able to stay in their home, drive their car, and not have to lose all of their pension. So they've got some. Now, it doesn't allow them to have an unlimited pension. I mean, there are costs, and the federal law does require that that the married couple pay for those costs, but it shouldn't be unlimited, and it's not. But what the state is doing is going above and beyond that and saying, no, we're going to have a 5-year look back and see what assets you got rid of, and if you sell your home after and there's profit to be made there, or if you pass on the farm or pass on the small business, these changes in the law allow the state to actually seize those assets to defer the Medicaid costs. And that's something new. And I mean, you want to talk about government overreach. This is the Walker administration saying that they're going to actually seize the assets of these middle-class retirees to pay for the nursing home costs of their deceased spouse. That's extraordinary.
Well, what do you think is going on here? Is this a misguided attempt to save taxpayer money, or is it something more than that?
It is. And I would remind people, you know, people say, well, you're going to make the taxpayers pay for it. I mean, these seniors who are in nursing home have paid taxes their entire lives, in most instances, right? These are people who have been paying Medicaid and Medicare and Social Security taxes their whole lives. So it's not as though they're not part of the people who created those tax revenues. But the other thing beyond it is, you know, in the discussion we had in joint finance, there was clearly an indication from some of the Republicans that, look, long-term healthcare costs are just something that government shouldn't be involved with anymore. People should buy insurance or come up with the money on their own. And the average nursing home costs on an annual basis is $90,000. Most people don't have the resources to be able to pay for, you know, a long-term care situation, which is why Medicaid is so critical in this piece. So what you're talking about is the government seizing the assets of middle-class folks who managed to pay off their home or build up a little bit of a nest egg, going above and beyond what the federal government required. And even in other jurisdictions where other states have tried this, North Dakota just got a decision in the Eighth Circuit saying you're exceeding the federal authority to go after these state assets. And my sense of it is that, unfortunately, because of what the Walker administration is doing in terms of seizing these assets, is we're going to see a lot of confusion, a lot of litigation, and a lot of uncertainty as to whether or not people can, you know, pass that family farm on to their kids or stay in their home after their spouse dies. It's a really misguided attempt to balance the budget. And experts who do this work have even said, you know, if surviving spouses know that the government's just going to seize everything, they're going to wind up on Medicaid as well because there's no incentive to save. And there's even discussion of what are called Medicaid divorces, where people are considering getting divorced just to protect their assets so that the surviving spouse doesn't wind up destitute. Now, that is clearly not good public policy. I mean, we shouldn't have so much government overreach into people's pensions and homes and small businesses that senior citizens are contemplating divorce to be able to enjoy their retirement.
So this did pass the Joint Finance Committee last week. What happens now? What do you want to see happen?
Yeah, it happened 10. It passed 10-6. So there was actually two Republicans who joined with Democrats in opposing these rules. I think what's going to happen now is a lot of litigation. And, you know, there's a bit of a theme here with the United Sportsman Grant. I mean, you know, sometimes it takes the Walker administration a while to figure out the limits of what it can and can't do. And my sense of it is that you're going to continue to hear a broad spectrum of people across the political spectrum saying this is really bad for assets. The bankers even advise us that the amount of money that they're going to have to spend to even impose these changes is going to exceed any of the money that the state could collect. It's poorly designed and really tries to get the state to walk away from its commitment to helping people in nursing homes. And what the state has got to confront, what the Walker administration has got to confront, as boomers start to retire, there are going to be additional costs for long-term care and nursing home care, and we're going to have to confront that. But I don't believe, and I don't think there's a strong sense in the state that the way to confront that is by seizing the assets of surviving spouses and leaving them destitute.
We have lots of callers, so let's go to John in Windsor next. Hello, John.
Hi. Well, you know, it seems to me every year we talk about the taxes that people inherit money for wealthy people, that cutting that, and actually that's income. But, you know, it seems like right now we're trying to cut income or inheritance tax. At the same time, we're raising taxes on middle classes to pay for this Medicaid spousal recovery stuff. And could Representative Mason talk about, you know, the inheritance tax that rich people do not pay versus the inheritance tax that poor people do pay?
Yeah, it's a great question and a great comparison. I mean, I was sort of amazed at the rhetoric that the Republicans who were supporting this used. If you compare that to the rhetoric that they talk about with the estate tax or what they call the death tax, they talk about how outrageous it is that government would come after that kind of resources. The estate tax loopholes are all still there. Millionaires are still going to be able to shield most of their income from taxation. And that's not who we're talking about when we talk about these Medicaid seizure rules of assets that the Walker administration has come up with. What we're talking about is instead of having adequate revenue to go into long-term care through Medicaid, we're talking about basically impoverishing middle-class citizens who've worked all their lives and saved a little bit of a nest egg and have paid off their home. Suddenly, after losing their spouse, sometimes of decades, having to go through the stress of wondering if the government is literally going to seize the assets in their home or their farm or their small business, and whether or not they'll be able to stay in their home. And that is really an unfair way to address the long-term care crisis that we're going to have in the state.
Let's go to Mark in Rockton. Hello, Mark.
Morning. I'm really interested in this contracting problem. As a Wisconsin citizen, I don't really know if this is an aberration. Look, if it wasn't for the Keystone Cop-esque way that this was handled, would we even know anything about this? What if they had a 501c3 tax-exempt charitable status? Would we even know that this was some kind of crony governmental approach? And so I would ask the representative on the phone if he's willing to, instead of just make political hay of this, to see if he can reach across the aisle to come up with a bipartisan panel that will look at our contracting and find out whether during Democratic and Republican administrations the taxpayers have been getting a bad deal here.
We have just a minute before our news.
Sure. I mean, this is back to the United Sportsmen issue. I mean, we called for having that very discussion in joint finance, and we were told that we couldn't even have that discussion because it wasn't on the agenda and that the majority would take it under advisement. I certainly hope that there are Republicans that would join with Democrats who would want to find a way, as I said earlier, to rewrite these rules to make it genuinely a competitive grant. And let different agencies apply for these resources for the betterment of Wisconsin and its natural heritage.
We have 30 seconds. Do you think that Mary Burke has a chance of defeating Governor Walker in the 2014 election?
I do. I do. I think she's an interesting candidate in that she's not a professional politician who spent her life in public service. She's got a great mix of public service as a commerce secretary and in the private sector as well, actually creating jobs in the real world. So I think she's going to be a very competitive candidate next year.
We're going to talk about the race for governor coming up after we check the news. Corey Mason, thanks very much for being here.
Always my pleasure.
Corey Mason is a Democratic state representative from Racine. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.